Hi everyone. So today we have a very special guest.
That's different.
Because it is swapped around this time. I think the last time we did a podcast together, you hosted.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
That's a while ago, eh?
That's a while ago. Sure. It's like, I think when I started.
Mm. Which is how long?
2 years?
Time flies, eh?
A little over 2 years now.
Crazy.
It's amazing. So yeah, now the roles have swapped. Now I am in charge of this.
I like it.
So yeah, we'll see how this goes. I don't know if I have like the best questions that you always have. So, well, we'll see. But yeah, we thought we will pull you in for your expedition that you just had. Well, both Svalbard and then Greenland.
It's a lot of Arctic time.
It's a lot of Arctic, a lot of cold.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I don't know. Like Joburg was like -2 minimum.
I saw that
this weekend, and that was like cold for me, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done.
But so, you see, what's interesting though is, like here, the weekend was cold, and I was cold the weekend. It was like jackets and fires and stuff. But the difference is, if you're in Joburg and there's a building and grass and doves outside and it's cold, it's weird.
Okay.
If I'm standing on the snow and I see the snow and the ice, it kind of makes sense to me that I should be cold.
You should be cold.
But in like Joburg, you're like, what's going on here?
Yes.
It's bizarre.
So it's Joburg cold is colder for you than like Arctic cold? Can I say that?
I think, and you're not prepped for it. Like I'm not wearing my puffer jackets and my ski gear.
I think I should get myself some ski gear.
It can be toasty.
Oh no, I can't handle this. But yeah. Anyways, let's talk about Svalbard first. Mm. You just came back from your Svalbard trip with Andrew. How was it? Tell me, like, what was the highlights, lowlights, if there were any?
Lowlights, not really anything. I mean, I think from a start from the back, I think the guests all got the place. They bought into the experience of being on a vessel where on a safari you can go to your room.
Mm.
Now you're just all the time in each other's faces. So they bought into that. But I think in all the time, it was my 16th trip up to Svalbard.
Okay.
I've done one or two like land-based things, but probably maybe not the top, but one of the top two trips I've ever done there. So when Andrew and I met with Christian and Bo the day before we left, we had to look at the ice conditions of where we go. Normally we go far north where the pack ice is.
Yes.
But this time of year, and we can talk about that, there was a lot of other ships, big cruise lines starting to go there. So that's a different discussion. But we thought we're not going to do that. There was some pack ice on the eastern and southeastern side in between the two main islands.
Okay. So I just have to like visualize.
Yes.
Exactly.
Big triangles on the side. So Christian said, let's go there. Okay. And the reason was that if you look at the triangle, what that is the island on the eastern side, in winter, the pack ice comes all the way around.
Okay.
So then as it starts breaking up, the ice starts receding back and up north. But this part was isolated between the islands. So as the ice pulls back, any wildlife that was on the ice and the ice gets smaller should be concentrated.
Okay.
That was our theory.
So it's basically like stuck on it.
But pretty much. Pretty much.
Ice. Okay.
And it worked out. There was one day in particular, we were in the pack ice, which was 12 kilometers off the closest land, which means the regulations of polar bear distances and stuff changes. So we got woken up at about, I'm going to lie, 3:30, 3:45, bare next to the boat.
No worries.
So everybody rushes out, small eyes. And as you came out, this female was sleeping, 20, 25 meters from the boat, sleeping there. So everybody rushes out. You grab a shot because you think this is going to be as good as it gets.
Yes.
And long story short, she must have spent 2 hours around the boat, walking around, looking up, sitting around. We then left her because she moved off. We kept going, and then we saw a mother with a koi. It was a cub of the year.
Okay.
You're like, koi. I only learned this year. Yeah. Koi.
Okay.
A koi. I'm like
fish. C-O.
C-O-Y. Okay. Cub of the year.
Cub of the year. Okay.
So anyway, we saw them, and they were on a kill. There was another bear behind that. There was another male far behind us, all binoculars, and then this other female as well. She approached the boat again. So one stage we had 5 bears within binocular distance from the boat.
Oh, okay.
So that's the most I've ever had. But the close-up sightings, the way that things just worked out. Mm. So I think backing the original plan of going to that ice obviously was the right thing. But other than that, we circumnavigated Nordauslandet, which is the northeastern island. Okay. I've only done that once before because the ice was open. It was amazing. The trip was, it was almost flawless from an execution point of view. The guests had a great time. We had lots of laughs. The photography was amazing. So no, it was one of the best I've had up there.
Nice.
It's crazy good.
And the guest, was there some of them that this was the first time officing? Now this is like...
In Svalbard?
Yes.
I think two. Linda was up there with me 2016, 17. Nicholas was with me 2-3 years ago and then one other time. I think those are the only two that have been in Svalbard before.
Before.
Some of the other people have done Antarctica.
Yes.
And some Northern Lights stuff. But for Svalbard, 8 of the people was their first time.
And having that as their first time, I mean, you have this expectation when you're going there. And then this is just like exceeded that expectation.
We kept on saying to them that you guys need to understand how special this is. This is not happening. Same as with any safari, right?
Yeah.
And Bo, who does this full time, one of the expedition leaders there, this was in 13 years of doing this every season.
Okay.
It was the closest he's ever had a mum and a koi, mum cub of the year, to the boat, and they were on a kill in all of his time.
Oh, wow.
So it was just things lined up. I think safari is the same. I think if you pay your dues, the nature gods will kind of reward you. And I think the people did get it. I mean, we had 20 bears total.
Oh, wow.
Some of them were pixel bears. But
it counts.
No, it does. It's on the board. It's actually, we said 20 and a half because we saw a dead one as well. Okay. Died natural causes. It was no funny business. No, none of the climate change. It was just
natural causes. Okay.
So, but yeah, we had some of the best puffin action I've had. It's a time of year though. June, July is good for them. Walrye. Apparently the scientists want to change it to walrye. Legit. Unless Christian Laveau are lying to me, but I don't think they are. So we had an incredible day with walruses, about 500 ton of the water. Okay. So it was next level.
Nice.
Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
Every time when you guys go on that trip, I'm just like, it blows my mind every time. I think, like, even if you don't see that much wildlife like you guys did,
yeah,
just being there and just be... It's crazy.
But you see, I think when these regulations came out, and Andrew and I recorded a podcast on the ship with Bo and Christian, yes, where we speak more about the regulations. People can go check that out. But when the regulations landed 2 years ago, there were three companies that closed their doors immediately.
Oh, because...
Because now bears.
Yeah.
That's all they did.
Yes.
We have never, since the first day I ran this on a wildlife trip up there, we never said this is a polar bear trip.
Yes.
It's an Arctic photo adventure. Or... up the narrative is kind of, we're going to explore the world the polar bear lives in. Mm. The other animals, the landscapes and stuff. And if you take it from that point of view, you can't lose.
Yes.
I should touch wood now, but we've got 100% success rate on bears because of how we run the system. So, no, it's a very, very special place. And again, if you buy into the experience of it, you can't lose.
You can't lose.
Can't lose.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Love that place.
Oh, one day.
One day
I'll be there.
You can maybe swap with Johan for next year because... I think there's about 4 or 5 spaces left for next year if everybody's keen. But if you want to negotiate with Johan and you come with, that's up to you guys.
Or I could just like buy myself in.
Or there's that. Or there's that.
I'll be the guest.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh no, that's incredible. So your other trip that we also want to talk about. Mm. The big one. walk us through this. Your Greenland expedition. I know you and Luke did a podcast about the preparation for it and everything that went into this trip. I don't know if you've listened to that, but I listened to it this morning.
Honestly, I recorded it here, but I haven't.
I haven't listened to it. But you said about everything, how you prep for it, doing the tires every morning.
Sure.
So all the preparation that went into that. Just walk me through that.
I mean, the prep was, I'm trying to think. So we started on the 1st of May, probably for about 8 months. There was a lot of tire dragging, a lot of strength training. I was just chatting to someone in the office now. And the data of how to train for something like this, and I've been digging deep into this, mentally, physically, nutrition, execution, whatever, it doesn't exist.
Mm.
Like, there wasn't data. So looking back now, I did a lot of strength training specific stuff, a lot of tire dragging up and down the hill in Northcliffe. But
I should tell you, so we've got friends that live in Krugersdorp.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got a house in Northcliffe as well.
Oh, right.
And like, there's a guy walking around there.
No.
And I'm like, I know the guy walking around and send them all this stuff. So they also followed your whole journey.
Oh, that's cool. I was the amount of people that you would walk, and I don't know if I spoke to Luke about this, but they'll be like, oh, your dog has a flat tire. The jokes you get on the road. It's like, dude, it's not the first time. Calm down. Or can I sit on it? Or it's like, yes, I know it's funny, I'm tired, move on. But the preparation was a long time coming. I think someone asked earlier this morning, I did a little presentation for the Wild Eye staff here, and what I would do differently. Strength training, probably not much, though more shoulder work.
Yes.
But the tires is a staple. It's literally the only way you can prepare for something like this. And like I mentioned this morning, if you did a marathon or an Ironman, you can prepare for it.
Yes.
Like you can do a marathon before you compete at the marathon. You can do your Ironman, the transitions, you can do
yes,
that.
Yes, you can practice it. You can.
There is no way you can do a 30-day on the ice expedition, 500 kilometers, eat the same food, get the cold, get the wind, without doing it.
Yes.
So what I say, you can prepare as best you can and then hope you have what it takes. But it's been, when I came back and I'm driving from the airport, I saw Northcliffe, the tower, the water tower. And there was this moment of, oh, I missed that.
I missed that.
It's weird. So, and then when I drove out this morning, my two tires I was dragging is up against the wall.
Okay.
Pull us like, oh, soon.
Your tires got names.
Balto and Ravna.
Nice.
Now, who that is when Fridtjof Nansen did the first crossing ever, Norwegian guy. He was one of the big explorers of the day. I'm getting this wrong. I think 1892 somewhere. Someone can check me on that. But
I'm going to Google it right now.
Please, yeah. It's like in the Rogan, it's like Jamie checks all the stuff live. We'll get someone to do that. So he then had two local Greenlandic guys with him. And the one was called Balto and the other one was called Ravna.
Okay.
And they were a part of that initial crossing. That's where the names came from.
Okay.
So, but yeah, the preparation was the one side. I think for everything that's coming up after this, I mean, we could chat about it later, mentally probably more, but physically and nutrition-wise, there's some things I would change, but not a hell of a lot.
But the question is, how do you prepare mentally for this? Because you don't know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. I mean, you did the Svalbard track and you sort of like move from there, but that's
12 days.
12 days. It's not, you did 29.
Mm-hmm.
It's not nearly as much mental preparation that you need to do for this.
Yeah.
But so, you to an extent, like what to expect, but didn't know about the rest. So, that mentally preparation, that's so difficult to prepare yourself.
Yeah. It's, I mean, like I mentioned in the morning, I knew what it felt like to wake up on day 12 after being on the ice for 12 days. And look, we didn't, in Svalbard, we didn't cover that amount of distance. It's more hilly, it's more mountainous. But I didn't know what day 13 through 29 feels like. So mentally, the real prep I actually did mentally, probably about 2 weeks before I left. Because there was a lot happening at that stage.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a transition from Wild Eye, starting my new business, kind of, there was a lot happening. So 2 weeks before, there was visualization, very specific kind of things around it, and also a lot of journaling.
Okay.
Because I knew that on the trip, every night I would journal. I haven't looked at it yet, of what I wrote
down. Okay.
That'll come still. But there was a lot of very focused on that, because there's different types of visualization of performance. You can have negative, like if something goes wrong, how do I recenter myself? I did a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
I've done it with clients a lot, but it was very interesting doing it on my own.
Yes.
So more than that, it's going to be interesting moving forward to see how to execute more on that.
Okay.
But that is where most people struggled.
Yes.
The physical, yes. I mean, there was injuries, there was feet and blisters and all those. But mentally, that's where it adds up. It's the isolation. It's the repetitive nature of it and stuff like that. So, and I think when you train as well, I went away a few times for 2 or 3 nights on my own to go hiking just to get that alone time.
Alone time, the isolation.
Because even though I was a group of 10, I was part of. I wasn't a group. I was part of a group of 10. Is the one article I wrote on my Substack was called Alone Together.
Okay.
Because like I said to you guys earlier on, there were days towards the second half where even though there's 10 of us, we didn't speak a word. Mm. I'm not even, not a word.
Not a word.
Because you wake up in the morning, it's wind, you're strapped up, you do your thing, you stop for 5 minutes, lunch, you just sit, you eat your noodles, you get up, you keep going.
Yeah.
So it's still a very singular thing, but you do what you can. Spend some time on your own. All the training, like I had people saying, they'll come and drag tires with me. And as great as that sounds, no.
No.
Because you want to get used to, and this sounds very t-shirt wise, but suffer on your own.
Yes.
Because that's what it's going
to
be.
That's what's going to happen is you're going to suffer on your own. How do you deal with, like, obviously you must have had this, like the negative thoughts, like, oh, I can't do this. Like, when is it stopping? Like, they must have
On training or on the
trip? On the trip, on the expedition. Like, there must have been
it's dark
times.
No, no dark.
But how do you deal with that? Like, is it like eating a sticky drovors that you brought from home? And it's like, there okay, I can do this. Or is it more like talk? Like you say, you didn't really talk to one another because of like the wind and stuff. Like, you're inside your head. So how do you deal with that?
It's hard because you're forced to be in a space mentally where you've closed the exit door. You can't get out.
Yeah.
Like once you leave, you can, like I said, you can swipe your card and 28,000 euros will get you a helicopter. If you're not injured, right? You can swipe your card. No. My card won't bounce. We won't make that. Just to be real. So
the helicopter will land and be like, sorry, sir.
Yeah, sorry, this is declined.
Declined, card declined.
Did he try the other one? So mentally, I mean, I spoke about this on the first one. When I did my first five-day training expedition.
Yes.
The first half an hour, they dropped us off and we started going. It was snowing sideways. So it wasn't a big storm, but it was yeah. Nasty. And within the first half an hour, every single negative thought, like, you haven't trained hard enough. You don't deserve to be here. Why are you here without guests? Because it's been such a thing. I've always done it just with guests.
Yeah.
You didn't train hard enough. You're from Africa. You don't belong here. Blah, 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 blah. And it's difficult because you're in a line. You're just going. It's repetitive movement that all those dark voices that come to you at 1:42 in the morning, they all shout at the same time.
Yes.
And you just keep going. Like, it builds resilience, but that you need to kind of just push through. By the end of the second day on that trip,
yeah,
I had the most calm headspace I've had in my life. Okay. And I think something clicked there it was like a drug, this calm, peaceful mind.
Yes.
So on this one, it was interesting. So mentally, I'm quite happy with my resilience levels mentally. Mm. But on day 14, my one foot basically broke. There was a nerve ending. I told you guys about that.
Yes.
That for about 3 days, I'm looking 10 out of 10 pain. It's got to keep going,
yes.
Right? So 9, 10, 11 hours a day, I was very deep in a pain cave, like hard.
Hard, yes.
But for the rest of the time, those things come up and you just have to go with it.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be weird. Like, on my skis, I had pictures of Jackson and Liu, the dogs.
Yes.
I would speak to them because Jackson trained with me a lot of the time. I would go walking and stuff. Some days I would just try and switch it off by listening to audiobooks, podcasts. Music, I might have mentioned it early on, was bad. Mm. Bad sometimes. Because if you're in a dark space, which a lot of the time you are, and you just got to go through it, like life. Music would happen and some song would come on. And I'm not even joking. I would just start crying. Oh, you burst out into tears. Not burst. It just starts leaking, right? But suddenly you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Yes.
Like, what's happening?
What's happening here?
Because all these emotions under the surface, music triggers that.
Yeah.
So on some days, I would just go without any sound for nine hours.
Okay.
How you deal with it, sometimes in life you just have to.
Mm.
And it's that. It's self-imposed, but it's hard. The whiteouts are difficult.
Yes.
When you've got nothing to focus on, and then your brain is just all over the place. I told the story from last year's 12-day expedition, where the one whiteout was heavy. I couldn't see you. We're sitting like a meter and a half apart. And halfway through the day, my brain was like, you know what? Everything's bad. My mom and dad are going to leave me and disown me. Everything's bad. Everybody's going to die. Like, bad thoughts.
Yes.
And I literally, honestly thought to myself, if I could just drop to the back of the line and go off into the white, nobody would miss
me. And no one would know.
And these are real thoughts. And you're like, there's a part of you that's looking from the outside in, and you're like, what are you doing? What are you thinking? But you can't stop it.
Mm.
So, and I think that's where the mental side of this, of if you're struggling with things, anxiety, depression, whatever it is, you need to do hard things. You need to get used to going through that. And a lot of the clients I work with is this.
Yes.
But for me, I think it's half of the, I almost said fun of it, but it's half of the reason is to go to that space and come out the other side.
Yes.
That's a lot of long way to say, I don't really know.
I don't know.
No.
you probably learned a lot like from this whole thing for your new business, like how to approach different things.
Oh,
and it's like you said earlier, everyone always asks you like, why? Why would you do this to mm-hmm. you? Like,
yeah.
Why this? Like, but I think you learn so much. And it's like, I love what you said about you learn how to ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. It's not about why you're doing it.
Yeah.
It's about asking the right questions. 100%. It's not just about yourself, about life, about everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that is such a valuable thing to take from this.
100%. I wrote, my newsletter goes out every Sunday. That was yesterday I wrote about the why. So, because the turnaround for me coming back from Greenland onto this Svalbard trip was like 8 days or something.
Yes.
Could barely walk because of the feet that they sent. I sat at home. But going to Svalbard and then in between, from when I got off the ice, I started planning for the next phase, which is a 5-6 year journey. So I had that in my mind of what's next and this. And then we were having a conversation on dinner on the boat. Who was there? Menachem, Laurie, and Lindsay were some of the guests sitting around the table. And Menachem looked at me and he's like, why do you do this? Like the Greenland thing.
Yes.
And it's the first time, honestly, the first time I've spoken to anybody about the future plans and why.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing. I've always said to people that the clarity, wisdom, perspective, understanding, acceptance happens at the extremes of the human experience. Mm. So this was extreme, right? I mean, from going through pain I never thought I could for 5-6 days at a time,
yes,
to the dark thoughts, to the ups, to the downs, those are the extremes. And what you learn about yourself. So either you put yourself there on your own, or life will hand it to you.
Yes.
Some shitty things might happen to you. People close to you might pass away. You might get some trauma, accident, whatever, right? And then life forces you to deal with those extreme results and the, yes, variables. So putting yourself in there, so that's the one side of it. Because, and I wrote about this yesterday as well, is I've always been a competitor. Mm. Like, I come from a sporting background.
Yes.
So I would, if my sister's kid comes over and we had to play something, I would annihilate him.
You would be like,
because
you're going,
I need
down.
To. I will you take your win. Ass. Yeah, I'm going to win. But, and what happens here is, and I said this for the first time out loud to Menachem and them, is I can compete at something now where nobody has to lose.
Okay.
So I can compete heavily with myself, with the voices, with the snow, with the skis, whatever it is, but nobody has to lose, which is an interesting thing. Mm. So there's, first of all, there's the extreme of the human experience. Then there's the competitive side of it, of I can compete with something and achieve something without anybody else having to lose. Then there's messages that I got yesterday, another one, where during the training and then after the trip, people would message and say, you know what, I follow the journey, well done, it's all great,
mm,
but because of what you've done, I've walked my dog around the block for the first time in 20 years.
Yeah.
That means something.
That inspiration, yeah.
And I didn't do it for that reason, but if that story can do that, that's amazing. I mean, it's also the, doing something like that takes all the other bad stuff in your head. Mm. Like from work, am I going to be good enough? Do I get a promotion? Will my clients show up? Can I do this? It turns the noise down on all the bad things, because this one big thing takes all of that energy into that. So there's more clear vision on life. I mean, and the amount of peace of mind I've had is quite amazing.
Yeah.
And then the last one is what you mentioned now, is you don't go and do something like that to find answers. You learn to ask better questions.
Better questions, though.
And maybe that's the point. Mm. Maybe that's the point of doing hard things. Of, I mean, you train, you go running and stuff like that. Maybe that's it at the base level. And a lot of the time with coaching clients as well for performance and mindset and stuff like that is, we might not find the answer that you're looking for, but let's ask better questions.
Better questions.
And there's an evolution in that as well. So somewhere in that is the why, but I can't give you a definitive, this is it.
This is why. Yes.
Yeah, it's hard.
No. Oh.
It's hard.
You said earlier about your foot.
Mm.
Like, walk me through that.
Wow, well played. I didn't see that coming, but yes.
Thank you so much. Thank
yeah.
So you got the injury around about day 14, you
yeah.
said. Like overuse, over...
Yeah, so the doctor I went to when I came back, there was a doctor on the trip as well. Kanch, if you're listening, dude, you're a hero. He gave me a lot of good drugs, but different discussion. So on day 14, it popped. It gets tired.
Yes.
So what happens is, if you look at your foot, left foot, between the third and the fourth toe underneath, there's a nerve ending that comes together.
Okay.
This thing feeds, as far as I understand, blood flow, movement, and sensitivity. And that got inflamed. Now, at its extreme, it becomes what's called a Morton's neuroma, which is a full inflammation and hardening of that sheath. So there's, yes, always pressure on the nerve.
Okay.
So we don't know why. It could just be overuse, which is real. My boots might have been a little too tight. I ended up stripping everything out of it as much as I could.
Yeah.
It might just have been like, sometimes the snow is a bit off and you go sideways and might have nicked it. I don't know. So on day 14, we did, I think, 9 hours that day. When we stopped to set up camp, it was brutal to step on. After setting up the tent, I couldn't put my foot on it. I couldn't put my weight on it at all. So they had a chopper on standby. Kanch was throwing codeine, ibuprofen, all good stuff at me. And it was about as much pain I've had in my life. So for the next 3 days, I was on a copious amount of drugs. And they took my sled away. I fought for it because it's a guy fed. Don't take my sled. But then... So it got spread out between the people. And then even without the sled for that first day, it was 9-10 out of, even with the drugs.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, it got a little bit better. I tried someone else's boots. We tried things around. I think with the drugs and kind of adjusting my ski style as such, it got a bit better.
Mm.
But it never went away. Like when we stopped in Tadoussac, which is a small town, after we got chopped out at the end, walking around town was brutal. I mean, I was limping. It was like a penguin with a wooden leg. It was not great, right? So when I got home, I went to the podiatrist and they did all kinds of scans and things. So what happens on the left foot, which was is the main one, the nerve sheath around the nerve was inflamed 6 times what it should be. So that's 6 times the pressure on the nerve.
Okay.
So, and it was like every morning afterwards, since almost to today, waking up, I don't know what pain I'm going to have. Is it dull ache? Is it stinging pain? Is it in the toes? Is it in the side? Can I feel my toes? It's that. And then because of the compensation for 2 weeks, the other one also went. So 4.5 times swelling there. So then on, what's today, Monday? Friday, I went to the podiatrist and they did what's called a cortisone and steroid infiltration. Now, 2 things I don't like, mention this, someone touching my feet and needles. So let's combine them, right? So they put a needle in between the third and the fourth toe. I mean, I was just like, no. So they did 2 on each foot, like to get it dead. And then they put the cortisone stuff in.
Okay.
Over the weekend, I was sitting on my couch the whole day because it was so swollen because of all the fluids. Today, it's fine, but I can feel it. It's very aware of it.
Yes.
So apparently, there's a 30% chance that this will kind of solve it.
Okay.
If not, I'm planning my next expedition in February. I might have to do another one of these. If not, there's some kind of surgical thing where they cut and burn the nerve or something. But it's been real. But, I mean, I jokingly say every sport has its injuries. But it's sometimes the cost you have to pay.
Yeah.
If someone said to me even 2 weeks ago, will you go again now?
Yes.
I would sign up.
You would get
it. That it's kind of, it is what it is.
So if you could go back in time and you knew that was going to happen, you still do it.
Yeah. I think 100%. Yes. And what Marty, one of the people who hosted the thing, when she came with the doctor to my tent to kind of look at this whole thing, the swelling was dramatic. It's not pretty. So she also mentioned there's a helicopter from a headspace point of view. It's like, that's not an option. Forget about the financial side, right? But don't put that shit in my head. And I said to her, I will crawl this if I need to finish.
Yeah.
But then she said to me, yeah, but she doesn't want to be in the position that I message her 10 years down the line and I can't walk because my, I said, that's my decision.
That's your, yes.
I'll worry about that.
Yeah.
So she sent me a very nice message after the fact asking, did they, and I said, you guys did what you had to do. I mean, we know running trips. If someone's going to be on a trip, do you, whatever the case is.
Yes.
So it was interesting. And I've got a lot of interesting messages from people. Why do you do this? Your feet, can you walk? It is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
But it doesn't take away from, 2 things can be true at the same time. Yes, it hurt more than I've had in my life, but the experience was worth it. Yeah. So they are.
The team that you had,
yes,
said you were a team of 10.
Mm.
I mean, I think that is also such an important thing, having everyone to gel. And not everyone is going to gel with one another. There's going to be problems and there's going to be words and there's going to be everything.
Yeah.
But knowing that everyone else is also going through sort of the same thing as you're going through.
Yeah.
And that must help a little bit. And you can sort of like talk through it. And you mentioned in the presentation that you did this morning, you share a tent with someone.
Yes.
So you do have that little bit of human interaction 100%, with someone, and that must help.
You talk about food most of the time. But yeah, I think everybody signs up for something like this for their own reasons.
Yes.
Whether it's like, I called it my white whale, but that shifted now. But if someone, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
One lady on there, Anna, she's done the 7 highest peaks, but this was her first Arctic experience. Some people have done Svalbard. So everybody has their own reason. And we never really, thinking about it, we never really went that deep into it.
Yes.
It's almost like when you're in it, let's not
talk about it.
Let's not touch it. You know, let's just get through this. Yeah.
It, yeah.
So, yeah. So for the first 2 weeks, there's 10. So for the first 18 days, every night you spend 2 nights tenting with someone and then you rotate. And then for the last bit, you just shack up with someone who you get along with and that works. But it was, and I wrote this on my Instagram as well when I posted the last group shot that I used here as well. It was amazing, the 10 very different people.
Yeah.
There was not a single issue. There were days we didn't speak, but there was never a point where you wanted to rip someone's face off.
Okay.
And I think it was just a great combination of people. The banter was great. Like I mentioned, gallows humor. Sometimes it's just, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this. But no, it was lucky that it worked out that way.
Yes.
I think also there was a certain, I was the oldest on the trip. Funny that. And then the youngest was, how old is Mika? I think 28, the youngest guy. But average age is probably like early 40s, if I'm not mistaken now. Maybe 40, little early 40s. So there is a certain maturity level that people know when to pull back, when not. You could see when someone's struggling.
Yeah.
And it happened a lot. where in the day someone's having a tough time or whatever the case is. So, no, it was a fantastic group of people.
Did you feel like with your coaching background that you see someone struggling gives that little bit of a motivation, or did you like pull back and be like, you know, this is not really my place to say something. They're working through it themselves.
Yeah. There was times. I mean, the thing I said with this morning as well, Mike, if you're listening, Mike one day swore at the wind. We had 75-kilometer crosswinds. We were going straight. And at some stage, excuse the phrase, but he's shouting, fuck, fuck, at the wind.
Yes.
He lost his mind at the wind. Yes. That's not normal. Right, that means there's other stuff happening. But this is like day 24, 25. So that's deep
end. It's deep end, yes.
So I get it. So there was just a quick, hey, oh, you're right, this, that, the other. There was never a point where we had conversations in the tent about stuff, yes. Just general and how you're feeling and stuff. But never that I went to someone. I did say to Marty and Stephen at some stage, they were kind of hosting the thing, that towards the second half, people get tired.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And I did say to them, I've got a small little, not a presentation, but a story or a value that if we feel necessary, we can use that.
Yes.
We never got there. We're close once or twice where I would do this with the team, but we never necessary. We never got there. Okay. And it had to do with, I mean, you do running.
No, if you see me running, you better
stop. Yeah, I run out the brick, so yeah, it's all good. So, but you train and stuff, I get
try,
it. Right?
I train. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So there's this thing that Tim Noakes, South African sports doctor, years ago came up with. And as I say this, I'm forgetting it. It's a theory where when you start getting tired, when your body gets tired, so if you run a marathon at about an hour, hour and a half, you might get really tired, that your limbic system takes over, that's your emotional center.
Yes.
That's when you're like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. My foot's hurting. Maybe I should stop. Maybe if I rest a bit. But if you go through that, the rational brain takes over again.
Okay.
So the problem is normally that's a singular thing. So on a long distance event like this, we were doing average, I think, throughout 25 Ks a day for a month. So you never really peak tired, but it just keeps wearing on. So you would literally be going between the limbic system, emotional, and rational, on, off.
Yeah.
And that's where people struggle. But the moment you name it, and you say to someone, listen, what you're feeling now is normal. Keep going.
Yeah.
So I had a little pep talk, if you will, ready that the guys, if they needed it, they would call on.
Yes.
But we never got to that point.
Okay.
People struggled, and it's expected.
It's expected to struggle.
But, Joe, we never had a massive crash.
Okay.
Yeah, which is good.
At least you were there. If there was a massive crash, you'd be like, you can't do that.
I had my moment. Like, oh my God, why am I here? The foot's so sore, everything. Yeah, yeah. So.
Mm. Yeah. From day like 25 to 29, you know, you're close. You're like 4 days out. But I know you explained to us, like, the chopper will be there. If you're not there, you miss it.
Yeah.
But it's that last little bit, like, it gives you a little bit more motivation. Like, I can do this. I've done 25 days already. Like, four more days is not going to hurt.
So,
like, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, that must be, like, amazing thinking, okay, four more days, three more days, two more days.
It's
20 more kilometers, you know.
100%.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing because you get to that stage and then you've done 25, you've got, like, four or five left. And like you said, but it's, and at some stage, and this was a mind job about this place, because if I think the ice cap, it looks like this, like an upside down smile.
Yes.
You go up, you come down. Up until the second last day, it felt like we're going uphill.
Okay.
But it's like you're standing on a white saucer and there's blue sky, and that's it. And you start getting, it's like almost there, but then you start going, okay, it's so close enough now. Mm. Like, I need to get there now. And the last day, the day before, we started at 11 o'clock in the evening the day before because we had to do 30-something Ks to the next afternoon. And that day was probably the hardest for everybody.
Okay.
Because now you can almost see where you need to go to, but there's still 12 kilometers left.
Yes.
You're going through really bad terrain, hard ice, people falling down because we tied up through crevasses and stuff. That was hard, but you're almost there, but you're like, okay, I wish I can just get there. But it's an interesting space that you just want to finish, but you're so automated in doing what you're doing that you just keep going. You just keep going. And Wanda asked earlier on, what did it feel like reaching the end? After all of this.
Yeah.
And it was almost like underwhelming initially. You stop there and you're at the point, this is it, we're done. And you're like, where's the fireworks? Where's the yay? So I took selfies with everybody and people were like, yay, high five, hugs. We took group shots, which to me is probably one of the most special shots I have because there was another American team that just finished. They waited for their helicopter and they took pictures for us and stuff. And that moment, but then suddenly reality is like, okay, cool. Now we need to pack the sleds, do this because the helicopter's coming and then it's done. But, and that's I think, still processing that. But those last 4 or 5 days were weird.
Yes.
It's kind of like you're so close. I just want to get there.
Get there, but
so close now, and it was interesting.
Still need to check this out. Yeah. Finishing, you said like a little bit over underwhelming. But getting to like the first civilization.
Tetzilac is a small little town.
Having that first hot shower, like, like talk me through that. Like, how did that feel? Like, sleeping in an actual bed, having shower, having a
so there we. It was in a little place called Tetzilac. So it's not a tourism place. It's, I said to Judy, imagine like a African rural type village, but in a beautiful bay in Greenland.
Okay.
So it's very rustic, very rural. I mean, there's not an eye store there. Tell you that Apple store. So we got to this little place, and then we share two to a room. And the first thing you do is you open, you take all your stuff out. It looks like a Cape Union and an REI threw up inside. There's shit everywhere. And then, so chilled in. The first shower was, so I mean, we did some work with on the trip with wet wipes and stuff as best you can.
Okay.
But the first shower, so unfortunately, it wasn't the best shower. The pressure was a bit bad. And they only had hand wash. Now, I didn't take shampoos and stuff with because you got to carry that.
Yes.
So they only had hand wash at the basin. So I hand washed with everything. Oh. Same with hair and everything. So washing as best as you can, it's like, okay, this is fine. And turn around and you see yourself in the mirror and it's like, whoa. First of all, very fluffy.
Okay,
beard and everything. But that's the first time, and this sounds weird, I saw myself without clothes on and I lost 9.6 kilograms in a month. We know this only because when we chop it out of Tetzilac to the next place where we were to get the big plane, we all asked them if we can sit on the luggage scale. So we took pictures of us there.
Yeah, okay.
Right? So 9.6 Ks down, it was quite dramatic. It was a bit of a shock.
Yes.
It's like, whoa, what just happened? But that shower wasn't great. I wish it was.
Okay.
Then we went to Kulusuk, which is, it's literally the airport, a hotel, and like a shopping, not shopping center, little store.
A store.
That's the place. We were there for 2 nights to line up with flights. And again, nice shower, not great. So I had to wait until I got to Reykjavik on my way out, flying back for the first real shower. But it was nice. Hot water was nice.
Hot water on demand?
Yes. Turn it tap. You don't have to boil it for an hour. Oh, no.
Oh, no. That must be crazy. Mm. One thing I also laughed at when you did the presentation was the first meal that you had.
Oh, the whale.
The whale.
Yeah.
Like, that must have been, like, so disappointing, actually.
It was, yeah. Because we asked the guy, so Roberto is a guy, Italian guy. He crossed ice Greenland years ago. He stayed there. He's got this little red house, if anybody ever wants to go to Tetzilac, red house hotel thing. And he said, no, you can do dinner for us on the first night back. And we asked for menus. He's like, no, you can basically take what you get.
Yes.
So the starter was like some kind of mushroom risotto. Yeah. Yeah, wouldn't pay for it. And then the next one came out, like I said, it's like a steak with like a red, white sauce and some veggies. It was whale. It could have been beef, chicken, broccoli, tofu. It was there, but we all had it. Definitely had it, yes.
What went through my mind when you said this is like, this guy has done this check, you know, and he serves that afterwards. Like, he must have probably realized before, like, when he did this, like, I would have killed for a pizza or something like that. And that's what I'm going to serve these guys. And
good
I was
point.
Like, that's like, I'm going to serve them whale.
Yeah.
So
I think he's been there for too long.
Okay.
So he did it in the 80s. So good couple of years ago.
Yes.
But it's also the reality. So the next day, so we had a few drinks, obviously, when we got there, this dinner that we had to pay for. So the next day when we go, so you go up to the restaurant to pay, he literally just put a sheet there on the table. He's like, okay, you do your thing. And this is how I think disconnected from the real world is write your name down. Dinner was 340 Danish kroner and then whatever drinks you have and just leave the cash on the table. So when I came up there's like a stack of cash. It's a very weird reality that they live in. And Roberto is not a fine food connoisseur at the best of times. So him in Tetzilac with his little hotel thing, we were grateful, but
but you hoped for.
The next day, four or five of us went up to, there's a big hotel up on the hill. God, when the name starts with an A, long word. And we went for lunch.
You could have made up anything, we would have believed you.
Yeah, sure. And then, so we went up for lunch there, they have a buffet. And there we had like the first, I think, real, like you could dish chicken and noodles and stuff. So we did some damage there.
Okay.
But yeah, the whale thing was interesting. It was interesting.
Okay. They're very interesting. Do you want to do it again? Obviously. You want to, the next one is the solo.
Yeah.
Same.
So the first thought was to do Greenland solo.
Okay.
So I've been talking to Eric Phillips, who's the owner of Ice Track, the company that did all the logistics for me on these things. I did my polar training with him 3 years ago. He's one of the, like, a living legend. I mean, he's been to the poles like 20 times on his own, and amazing guy. So he's consulting on me now, consulting as a service to me for the next 5-6 years that I want to do.
Okay.
The first thing was, I thought, let's do Greenland on my own.
Okay.
However, there's now, it has happened in the past, but there's some kind of permit change as far as I know. I don't know if it's political. I don't know what the deal is. I do know that even the ship, speaking to Christian from Svalbard, going to Greenland requires different permitting systems. Okay. So for now, Greenland got taken off the table.
Okay.
So I've been doing a bunch of research and stuff. So I then, and I'm speaking under correction, but I'm pretty sure this is correct, that my goal is now, and people think I'm crazy, but that's fine, in 2030, which is four years from now, to try and do a solo unsupported trek to the South Pole. So that would be 1,100 kilometers, 50 to 60 days.
So that's double what you did now.
Correct.
Okay.
But the ALE, Antarctica Logistic Expeditions, that got very strict requirements for even applying to do that.
Okay.
So working back, Greenland is one of them. So I've spoken to Eric and stuff like that, and he says this is possible. So over the next 4 or 5 years, the idea is as follows. February next year is to do a solo 20-day. The Antarctica requires that as one of your check marks. So I'm looking at doing that in Finnmarksvidda, which is in the northern plateaus of Norway, between Tromsø and Alta.
Okay.
Alta is where we ran the Orca trip from.
Yes.
There's a mountain plateau there. So it mimics the Antarctic environment pretty closely, but you're never far away from civilization. So you do your own tracking and stuff. Looking at that for February. Then in 2028, I'm trying, and this is a long shot, to do a south to north of Svalbard.
Okay, yes.
The difference here is there's polar bears.
Oh, yes.
So as a group, you do polar bear watch and stuff like that. So there would be weapon handling and stuff like that. So Eric's looking into the idea of that, if it's possible. If it doesn't have to be solo. So if I need to get a guide as such to join me or someone else, that's fine. Alternatively, I will do an Iceland crossing.
Okay.
Similar distance-ish, same duration, like 20 to 30 days, but different because now you've got volcanic area, so there's walking and dragging and stuff like that. 2029 then would be something in Antarctica so that you get onto the register for Antarctica logistics. Mm-hmm. Might just be like a week thing on ice. Then in March 2030, I would apply officially to do the South Pole thing for that end of the year. But the stack of evidence you need, so I mean, training courses, which I've done, Greenland crossing, 20 dates, there's all of these. So that would hopefully, all going well, be in 2030. And in 2031, I want to go back to Greenland. So it's 5-year kind of homecoming, if you will, with some South African. I don't know who that is yet. I said to Johan, if he's listening to this, he says, nah, thanks, he's good. But that would be that.
Okay.
The long term, if after that, would be the North Pole. Problem is, it's closed right now because of the war, and it has been for quite some time. So I don't know if that's even possible anymore. But that's kind of
6 years' time.
Yeah, we can worry about it then. Sorry. So that's kind of the arc of what I'm looking at now. I've just updated my website with all of the details on this thing and stuff like that. But this isn't a donation-based thing. The kind of money we're talking about for the South Pole and the full expedition there, it's big money. So this is corporate sponsorship. This is big. So that's also for the next 4 or 5 years, it's me building up towards that. You know?
Nice. No, it sounds incredible. I'm not going to be that South African.
Damn it, I was about to ask.
No, just saying that. No. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, if I die in Joburg winter, I'm not.
Yeah.
Thank you. But there was a question I wanted to ask you now.
It's an interesting thing while you think about that is everything else from a business point of view for me. So the performance coaching, the keynotes, the talks, all of this fits beautifully together. So this road to the South Pole, which is the actual link on the website, the road to the South Pole, it's beautiful. Because, I mean, the thing I did with you guys this morning, there's some beautiful lessons to take out of it. There's a couple of keynotes that I've got going into KwaZulu-Natal. I'm looking at the US and Canada when I get there, October, November. But all of it works beautifully together. So fix the plane while it's flying and kind of make these things up. But it's been an amazing journey, and it's... You have to be open, I think, to where it takes you.
Yes.
Otherwise, you can't be too linear. So that's the goal. Hopefully make that work. Yeah.
Okay, well.
We'll see.
I love to follow the journey. I'll, like, while you did the trek as well. constantly being on there.
That, like, that map was pretty cool.
Map, yeah. And you're like, oh, look where he is now. Yeah. And you're like, he's gone this far. Right. And I was traveling myself when I saw it.
Oh, right, right.
So I was like, oh, look at this. Jerry is there right now. Oh. I'm like, yeah, this is... This
The map was amazing. It was almost because I journal every night, like writing. Mm. But I then the text updates straight from the Garmin onto the map.
Yes.
Like, I don't know what I said on there. I'm scared to think, but I think Lindsay maybe asked me, she could see when I went dark, when it was like tough days. Like, I don't even want to, I'm not going to read it. Maybe one day.
One day.
But it was a nice way to put it out there. And the interesting thing is, so there's two, there's solo and there's unsupported. Unsupported means no external help, no dogs, no mechanical, no food drop. You take everything with you. Solo means it's just you.
It's just you.
So now, as I understand this, there's all these definitions, should you want records, like first South African, first that the other is... If you're doing solo or unsupported and you meet another team, you can't spend more than like 10 to 15 minutes before, otherwise it's not unsupported anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's weird. It's a whole new world, which is quite nice, the whole discovery of it.
And he said this morning that you are one of five South Africans?
So Greenland's interesting because there's not enough data on it, but from what we could gather, looking online, and I've used every search engine possible.
You said you couldn't find much.
So there's two people that did it together.
Okay.
There's one that did it with, I think he used kites and stuff as well, but I can't find more than five.
Okay.
So from what we can tell, I'm one of less than five that have done the unsupported Greenland crossing, in a team or not, that's different. Also, and I'm waiting for final confirmation of this, if I do Svalbard, it will definitely be first. Okay. Iceland, not much data there, but the solo thing, I'm 98% sure from what we can find from official records.
Yes.
That if I managed to pull off the South Pole thing, I would be the first African in South Africa to do that.
Oh, wow.
They have done it, but it was with kites or as part of a team. Mm. I found one guy in 2011, Howard something, that did it unsupported or solo, unsupported, but it wasn't because he met a team there and he was following another team. So it didn't comply.
Comply, okay.
So I'm waiting. Eric helping me with those details. Yes. But hopefully, if that's the case, that could be a thing.
Every time when I spoke about the Greenland thing, I'm like, yeah, he's one of the five South Africans.
I
led with that. I'm like, one of five South Africans.
It's weird.
Because it's amazing. Because I think South Africa is a country we're always so proud of things that people in South Africa do. And like,
I had a beanie. I bought a South African beanie, like real bad, a big blue, like a very loud one.
Yes.
And it also had a little flag. So I got this picture as well with the tent set up in the snow and the flag and stuff.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool to do.
Yes.
It's the one thing I would take next time is my Springbok rugby jersey.
Nice.
I think that could be quite badass.
Yes. Do you know what you should do? And actually, I listened to this on the radio on the way to work this morning. Yeah. It was a guy with the Springboks England game this weekend that had his fluffy Speedo on. So if you don't know what a fluffy Speedo is, it's a Speedo with a South African flag. And he had that on for the whole game.
I saw a video of him.
Yeah, yes. So you should do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be quite cool. Yeah. The whole Speedo thing, I've never been a fan of, but this might have legs.
It's not, okay. You know. Except for the Speedo, what else would you take that you didn't have with you this time?
I think it'll revolve around nutrition.
Okay.
Drivor's Biltong was great because it like you're taking it out of the deep freeze.
Yes.
So it's awesome. Nougat was very handy. So Wedgwood Nougat gave me a sponsorship of a whole stack of Nougat, which was great. I would probably prep little sachets of protein and creatine.
Okay.
There is protein in the breakfast bomb that we normally use, but I would double down on that just from a body point of view. Knowing what I know now for this duration, I'd probably take different strapping and stuff for the feet. A lot of drugs, like hardcore codeine and stuff like that for just in case.
You know a guy.
I know a guy, yes. Ken, she'll talk to you. And then, I mean, little gear things here and there, but nothing too dramatic. What I also would be interested in is the effect of the body is things like, and talking about peptides now, so BPC-157 and TB-500, which is a soft tissue recovery, which I've used in the past for injuries, was phenomenal. And I wonder what that would be like having that on the ice.
Yes.
Every morning, just as a recovery protocol.
Yeah.
But other than that, pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
A lot of different stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. But the prep, I mean, is for solo as well, you need to carry the tent and the stove and all
you're not splitting it between.
So,
maybe adding the third tire next time.
Oh, goodness, yeah. I need new ones because they're bust. They're literally scraped off. So
I can imagine.
I'll go look.
Yes. But yeah. Mm. But Jerry, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. Like following the whole journey, like hearing everything afterwards and looking forward to the next 5-6 years.
It's been amazing.
Of everything.
No. Thank you. It's been great. Chat about it. The support's been amazing. But yeah, we'll, it's early days, but hopefully the 5-6 year arc starts now.
There you go.
Thanks,
good
Danny.
Luck, good luck.
Thank you.
And I'm not going to be that other.
I'll still ask you later on again. We'll see how it goes. Love it.
Thank you. But thank you. And then, yeah, good luck with everything. All right, everyone. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.